You never interfere with a working guide dog. When a guide dog's in harness, you never bother it. That is not so true with a hearing dog. You can pet Bridget. Don't give her very much popcorn. As you may cancel out our demonstration tonight. Nobody's asked me. Most of the people think I'm crazy, and so they haven't asked me what this is.
It's a dog whistle.
It's a bird collar. I'm a birder, and I often wear that, waiting for somebody to recognize me.
I'm not a bird.
Yeah. It needs a little rosin, but. She hears that. She's very perceptive in hearing. What we're going to do, we haven't really started yet, so don't just keep chewing your popcorn. I'm going to tell you a little bit about hearing dogs, and then we'll introduce Bridget to you. We'll have the chief, my wife, lay down. She won't go to sleep because she's on the program after that. And then the alarm clock, I won't tell the dogs, the alarm clock will go off. And then the dog is supposed to jump on her and get a treat. You don't have to give them a treat every time, but in new situations. And that's one thing we failed on here. We did not reinforce her on this trip. So the alarm clock ran longer here than it does at home. At home, of course, things are pretty quiet in Pullman at night. So by 6:30 in the morning, that dog is perched for a takeoff onto that bed for an 8-foot jump on top of the chief. She enjoys that more than almost anything else. And so we'll see. We tried it out once here and it worked. So I imagine it won't work the next time. Nine seconds to go. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's the signal for the tape room to start the tape if they want to tape it. I don't even know if they're there. I just have faith. My name is Leo Bustin, and we're going to discuss helping understand the hearing handicapped. And the chief participants are Bridget Bustin, who I, and only I, am allowed to call Dingbat. And my wife, Signa, who I call the chief. And then I'll kind of pick up the pieces. But before I introduce Bridget, I want to tell you how she came to be. Our earlier dog, Great Reluctance, the chief's earlier dog, Great Reluctance, we made a pact that when it no longer enjoyed life and didn't have a chance of enjoying life, that we would euthanize it. Which we did. It was a very traumatic thing. And during the grief period following the loss of this animal, I debated about what to do. And I won't tell you all the things I did, but one day I came home And I asked the chief if she remembered at Thanksgiving time when we visited with this lady about her dog, Bridget. It was a very lovable dog and real jumpy around. And I said that Linda, who owns it, can no longer keep it because she has to go to an apartment where it's not allowed. So she's going to take it to the pound. And it was only 3 years old at the time. And I said, wouldn't you try it for about 10 days or 2 weeks and see if it wouldn't be an all right dog for you? And she agreed to this and was indeed fortunate, because 2.5 years ago, in fact, a week before Easter, I came home and my wife was at the sink. And I came in and I said something to her. And usually when I say anything to her, she comes to attention. But she didn't. And I said it again and nothing happened. So I went over to the sink and grabbed her arm very gently, and she turned around and looked at me. And she says, "Oh, I lost my hearing today." She could no longer hear me. Now, she had developed meniere's on October 11th. Well, the first really big attack that continued then was on October 11th, 1979. She developed meniere's and for a period of time lost most of one ear, but she did well on the other ear. And she had then lost completely that other ear. Well, I'm here to tell you that a hearing handicap is one of the worst. You see, if you lose your sight, it only separates you from things, but I shouldn't say only, it separates you from things. But hearing handicap, loss of hearing, separates you from people. And that's very, very bad. And if you don't have communication with people, it's a very serious matter. And the first thing that hit me when she could no longer hear me was a conversation that we had had probably over 20 years before. I had seen a blind man, and I had said to the chief, I says, "Oh, I couldn't stand to lose my eyesight." And she said, I couldn't stand to lose my hearing. Well, she knew more about it than I did. Because I've since talked to a lot of people who are handicapped. And I've worked, I've spent quite a bit of time with hearing handicapped. And your dog is a long ways away.
No. There's been enough over the door.
Oh, maybe you should have her on your lap. And like a fellow that owns a chemical company, he lost his sight when he was 9 years old, and I asked him, how is a handicap like this, after I got to know him pretty well, and losing your eyesight, say, versus losing your hearing? Oh, he says, losing your eyesight, I isn't all that bad. He says, I'm doing well. But he says, I couldn't stand to lose my hearing. I think Helen Keller felt the same way. And there's a lot of things involved here, and some of it will come out tonight. Because you're isolated, you see. And what I told the chief was that I'll get you a hearing dog. Because hearing dogs have been developed now for quite some time. In Minnesota, in fact, it was, I think, in Minneapolis greater area, there was a lady who had a dog, and she had trained it to be a hearing dog. I won't be looking much at you tonight. I'll be looking this way so my wife can read my lips and know some of the things that I'm saying. If I don't want her to say it, then I'll look over here. But this lady her dog died that she had trained to be her hearing dog because she had lost her hearing. And so she called up, a local TV station and asked them if they could find her another hearing dog. I said, we don't know anything about hearing dogs. Why don't you call the Humane Society? Called them up, and they didn't know about it either. But they started a program, but it was too big for them. Well, I think at that time, then, the American Humane Association, headquartered in Colorado, started a program of training hearing dogs. I told some of you about I kept track of that, and I was on the first follow-up on the placement of the first hearing dog here in the Northwest. It was with Mrs. Christensen at Gig Harbor, and that was an interesting experience. And if we have time, I'll get back into it. Come on, Dima. And I'm just talking to Dingbat. And since that time, there's quite a, as far as I know, a good program at Applegate Training Center at Jacksonville, Oregon. I think they do a good job down at San Francisco SPCA. I think that the American Humane is phasing theirs out in Colorado, but there is some in the East. And 3 years ago, I was in London and got them excited about it. And they started a program, which I think is an outstanding program. And I was privileged to be in London in April to introduce a couple, the Chapmans, to their dog Chum, who was then going into special training for them. They were both deaf from birth, and they had signing. And they were in charge of a school in Devon for disturbed hearing handicapped children. And this was a very emotional time in my life and everybody's life. It was a great public relations event because most people recognized, when I told them, they recognized that Dingbat serves only the chief, you see, and Ranger serves only Mrs. Christensen in Gig Harbor, but Chum is going to serve both Mr. and Mrs. Chapman in Devon and probably have a very significant effect on all those disturbed hearing handicapped. Because hearing handicapped, they have a very low self-image, especially if you've gone through it in your life. And to show you that very poignantly, I have a friend who's a physician. He has been deaf since birth. He has some special devices in his ears where he can hear a few sounds, and he has all of the machinery it takes to do this. Well, he probably qualified to be a physician when he was in 20s, but he never got into a medical school, I think, till he was probably in about 40. He eventually made it through medical school. And I visited with him and told him about hearing dogs. He didn't know about hearing dogs. And I asked him, how do your patients respond to you? And how do you deal with them? He says, I have no troubles. In fact, he's going well. Except for the hearing handicapped. They don't think I'm for real. See? They don't believe they could make it. Well, that's very tragic. And what I'm about is to change this image and do something about it and have you help with this. Because there are 14 to probably 16 million people in the United States who are hearing handicapped. I was so pleased when I was in Australia. That was a very popular subject there. As some of you were last night, heard the Vesper service. They have now a program, and they had it on 60 Minutes from their country that they had started a hearing handicap program. So I was questioned a lot about that in Australia. And in fact, it was interesting that executive I told you about last night, that I had a class at Murdoch University for 2 weeks. And one of the things they brought up, we're going to take some animals into a hearing handicapped home, or a home for the hearing handicapped. So now that chance meeting with his executive, who has a hearing school, I wrote immediately back to my class and Murdoch University, because at Murdoch University during my 2 weeks, we made a plan for Murdoch in Western Australia for the human-animal bond. What they, as a university, they as a college of veterinary medicine, they as students, and that whole community could do in the prisons, in the resident homes, and in school system. So they developed the whole plan. And it was very exciting. And now this person, he's very open to this, you see. And they're going to write to the principal and start this. So it's an exciting thing of what these animals can do. Now, when I asked the chief if I couldn't get her a hearing dog, which costs about $2,500, she says, "No, I can't stand to have another dog now." I says, "Well, can you part with your dog for a couple of months of intensive training?" And she said, "No." Well, I'm a very brash person. And I said, "Well, we'll train Dingbat to be a hearing dog." Which was it's a long shot. Because Dingbat, by this time, was already 5 years old. It had a very bad upbringing. That is, people had been unkind to her in her young days. If you pick up something, like you're going to throw it, you know, she cowers. They apparently disturbed her when she was also eating, I think. I think they bothered her. Remember, she's very hesitant to go up to her feeding dish. So they mistreated her. And if you ran a profile on her as a candidate for a hearing dog school, you probably would not pick her. Although she's very alert and very bright. She's almost too bright. But I started her out on the door so that she would tell the chief when I was at the door, when the doorbell rang. And she picked up on that pretty well. It was a reward system. And then Terry Ryan, who's a wonderful person and works with us on the People Pet Partnership, and is an expert dog trainer. She got interested in this, and the chief had gone to obedience school with her dog, but it's the people that go to obedience school. And she became quite obedient as a result of this. And so she learned to know Terry, and Terry, like everybody that meets my wife, likes her. And she got there. And she knew about this, and she says, I'd like to, as an experiment, see if I can't train a hearing dog in a home. And so we set up a protocol, the three of us working together to decide, you know, how is the best way to train this dog that had already been trained not to jump on people and not to jump on beds. I don't think she got on the bed except when we were gone. And you see, it doesn't do much good for a dog to bark when you can't hear. They have to learn to jump on you, to attract you. And in the routine training, you can sort of adjust it to what the needs are. If you're a young mother with a child, it will probably train to answer the door as our dog does. Tell chief when somebody's at the door. To get her attention when the smoke alarm is going. To wake her up with the alarm clock. And to tell her when the phone is ringing. But they can also be trained for sirens. Our dog has not been trained for sirens, which is, I think, a good idea. And I counseled Mrs. Christensen on her dog Ranger because she drove her car a lot. And of course she can't hear the approaching siren. But they also teach them when the baby's crying to go and pay attention to the baby. They pick up well on this. They can pick up on a lot of things. We underestimate the capabilities of animals in most cases. I suppose many dogs have a vocabulary of maybe 50 or 60 words. I don't know how many Dingbat has, but she has quite a few. And So now I think it might be appropriate at this time for just to show you, if it doesn't work, it does work for us, but I thought you'd, if it works, it'll be fun. If it doesn't, you have to believe us that it works. Okay, Chief, if you lay down here. Oh, yes. She knows she's going to get a treat. See? She smells it.
Good night, folks.
You better leave space here for her to jump on, you see. Otherwise, she won't. This is, of course, we usually don't hear a book in. That's all right. She also does it many times without a treat, but we usually don't have this many people in our bedroom. We don't invite any bears in either. All right, now I'm going to tell you a little more about my wife. There's a few things she doesn't like. Everybody likes, that knows my wife, likes her or loves her. And she doesn't want you to call the dog Dingbat. It's Bridget. I don't want you ever call that dog Dingbat in her presence. And the other thing that she doesn't like is say, do you work? This button says, every mother is a working mother. And she's a mother. So I wanted you to know that. So these are some of her beliefs, I guess. We have been married for 41 years in June the 13th. I can't remember when I was single. And what I've asked her to do is to discuss with you some of the things that would help people, I think, through her experiences, to help people who are hearing handicapped, and some of her experiences as a result of this very serious deficit. She played the piano before this happened and loved concerts. And if you're going to lose your hearing, don't lose it right before Easter Sunday. Because her favorite songs were Easter Sunday songs. And when we walked into church that day, she says, "What's that noise?" And she didn't realize that everybody heard her say, "What's that noise?" It was the organ playing. All right, Chief.
Okay. There are some frustrations connected with being hard of hearing. He's touched on a few of them. One I hadn't thought of before right now was a speaker who would sit on the edge of his chair, and so someone who was sitting back here hoping to see at least a profile couldn't even see that, you know? But I took a class in lip reading, and I do read lips, not well. I wish I could do it well, but I can't hear unless I can see your mouth. And if I pass you outside like this bright sunny afternoon, I met a couple of people. The sun was in back of them. All I could see was a silhouette of their face, so I couldn't hear what they said. I couldn't recognize them at first even. But light is important. It's hard to look, for instance, with light in our church. It's hard to look at the pastor because there's a light shining in back of him. I can look at him, but it's hard to read his lips. And I'd like to give you a few tips. Many of you have been very kind and have talked to me in a way that I could understand you. Face to face, full face is much better than, you know, a profile. And not too far away, and in the dining hall, it's very difficult. Any place where there's background noise, I think a lot of you who have just a tiny bit of hearing trouble are troubled with background noise. So if I don't understand you when you talk to me in the dining hall or someplace like that, it's on that account. Speak clearly, but don't exaggerate your words, because that throws me completely off. And sometimes I went to a class this spring in signing. I thought, I didn't take that originally because I thought, well, I don't want to have to get a whole set of new friends to find people who signed. And so I took the lip reading instead. But I did take this class this spring, and it was very frustrating because the teacher, well, the rest of the class were college co-eds with good hearing. And the teacher was a young woman, and she would explain something clearly, speak slowly, and so I could hear. And then she would start just chatting away with the girls, and I couldn't understand a thing she said. And she would go on like that. And I even asked her, you know, when you speak very fast, I get lost.
Trimming mustaches.
Yes. Your face, you have to remember not to cover your mouth. And if you have a mustache that's bushy, you have to kind of trim it, or I can't see your mouth. And don't whisper in my ear, because I can't hear that at all. I need to see you. Sometimes, if you want to talk to me and I'm looking over here, just reach out and touch me to get my attention. I keep saying I assume that you will include all hearing impaired people to that. Like even with a child, when you're going to tell them something, you have to be sure you have their attention. Sometimes names are very difficult for me to get, because in lip reading, you do a lot of guessing. Like from the context, you can fill in a few words. But names, there's no context unless you can give me a visual demonstration, like Esther Lines showed me her notebook with the lines in it, and she says, Lines, that's my last name. I'll remember that. And but you can spell out part of it, you know, like A is in Adam, B is in boy, or just, and that helps. We have an amplifier on our phone at home, otherwise I can't hear the phone at all. I mean, I can't, I don't know if anybody's on the other end or not, but there, of course, the lip reading is of no use.
And I do have trouble with phone conversations. I take messages for Leo and I get the name wrong. Or I say somebody from Yakima called. He seemed to know you well. Can you think who that might be? And turning up the volume, there's an adjustment on that. And this applies also to television or radio, which I don't even listen to anymore. You can turn the volume up. If it's too loud, it's just a total loss. If it's, it kind of echoes in my head. And that's like if someone talks, you know, raises her voice too much. Usually, if you have a relatively strong voice, I can hear you. But the problem is understanding, because I have a severe hearing loss. Going down the next step, it's... Well, I can't remember. There's one step below me, and then you're deaf. Anyway, there are some sounds I don't hear at all. And so there's a distortion which makes understanding difficult. I can hear, but I don't understand often. And that's the same thing that happens with music. It's very distorted, unpleasant. I used to enjoy music, but now sopranos really are good. Just are awful. But don't stop singing soprano. Sometimes if you're trying to tell me something and I don't understand, you might think of another way of saying it that I would hear. And I've said that face to face is good. I have pulled our furniture in from the walls a little bit. And I've taken a board out of the table, trying to force people to stay a little closer together so I can hear them. I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yes, with a group, like even at a small table with three or four people who are carrying on a conversation and trying to include me, it's difficult because I can look at one person and hear. Then somebody over here says something, and by the time I look over here, they're through saying it, and somebody over here is saying it, or is answering. And so it's difficult. I can't think of anything else.
Okay. All right, I'll pick up from there now. I think, and tell you some of the things that I was thankful for. I think within 24 hours after she lost her hearing, Pastor Shirley from our church was there to see her. He was sensitive to recognize that this is a great loss. And the first time he preached in church, before he went up to the pulpit, he delivered a copy of his sermon to her, so she could follow along. And he's continued to do this. And another person that does this is now Roger Pettinger, doesn't he, who's been here. And so I would encourage that for some of you who are pastors. And I'm going to extend that a little more. Now, one of the things that Chief is no different from probably many of you, or what, if this happened to me, you just soon curl up with a book, and let the world go by. Because to go out in a group and keep saying, I can't hear you, or you say that again, you know, that gets kind of tiresome. To go to to a group like this or cocktail parties or something, that's a dead loss, or big dinner parties. It's just bedlam. Well, she said, I guess we had enjoyed so much summer theater in Pullman, because they had some very good summer theater. She says, I guess it's no use going to summer theater. I says, oh yes, you are going to summer theater. And I says, we're going to get the script, and you're going to sit right down in front, which is only 6 feet from the platform, 8 feet. And we did, and she enjoyed it, following along. So what I'm saying here, you sometimes have to force a person to stay involved, and she has. I mean, she's still a pink lady, and if she isn't feeling dizzy that day, which you get many years, you can start being dizzy and then go into retching and vomiting. You see, you're dizzy and you don't know which end is up, which is a very bad disease in itself, as if this isn't enough. But if she's feeling good, she goes to the hospital as a pink lady. And one day she came home, she was very proud because the person had asked for pineapple apricot juice. Well, at least that's what they got.
One thing, though, that was a surprise to me, a pleasant surprise, I was hesitant because I thought people that are sick, they don't want to have to raise their voice and talk to somebody that's hard of hearing. But I asked them what kind of juice they would like. And if I can't hear them, I go out and I say, Margaret, would you go in here? I can't hear. But several times, I would say many times, I have said, I'm sorry, I'm hard of hearing. Would you repeat that? And the patient has said, oh, well, so am I. And it's been a bond rather than a negative thing.
Yeah. And on things, and I'm doing it more and more because, although the chief and I have a pretty good voice most times, and and I usually look right at her and decide things. But I have her sometimes, although she hesitates a lot of times, to repeat what I said on important things, and I usually leave before she gets up in the morning. So I'll write out the things, like, we need this or something, so that she can read it, so we're sure of it. Because if you live with a hearing handicap, you can get into all kinds of trouble, because you might say something, and they can be 10 miles off on it. And then you come home and you find out you thought they were going to do something, or and they didn't really dig it, you see. So that keeps down a lot of family fights. Probably help a lot of you who can hear. You wrote it down or repeated it. Now, we don't have any really big parties anymore. You know, big dinner parties. And like the chief said, you know, we may have four there. And what I do, I can read her pretty well now. And I try to keep her in the conversation. And if I see she's getting behind, I'll repeat it. I'll stop them and I'll say, here's where we are. Or I said, this is very long and I'll tell you after the party. You see? So that she's kind of with it. Now, she's also mentioned the amplified phone. And you turn your face. And one of the things was, you know, life can become sort of dreary. And we play quite a bit of cribbage, sitting right across from each other, usually every Friday night and sometimes Saturday night. And she's getting pretty good at it. But you don't have to be able to speak to play cribbage. Although when she's about to skunk me, there's quite a bit of conversation. And another thing we play is ping pong. You don't really have to be able to hear to play ping pong. So we play quite a bit of ping pong. And I think that's important. And
Now, I mentioned encouraging to participate. The other thing, and she caught me at something that I try conscientiously not to do. Tonight is the first time, I think, since I've been here, when I turned off the lights for my slides, I didn't ask if there was somebody who read lips in the audience, because I had this flashlight, and my wife wasn't there, or if she would have come, I would have put this on my lips when I turned off the lights, so that anybody that reads lips could see my lips, you see. And this is very important, because if you turn off the lights, it's awful hard to read lips. Now, here, if I were dictator of Holden, you've seen in parking places it says maybe there's a sign for somebody in a wheelchair, and that's where they're parked. Huh? In this room, I would place probably that. I'd first determine, is there a hearing handicapped person in town, and find out what their schedule. And I would put probably that seat, with maybe HH on it, for hearing handicapped, and that's for them. Because you can say, well, you're already seated there, go over here. Well, you see, you're looking into the light here when this speaker is here. See, this room is not designed for hearing handicapped, you see. She should really be sitting right there for the speaker, right where the candles are.
This is not a good room
yeah.
for lectures. I mean, there are too many of you, we're too far away, even for a slight hearing loss.
And and another thing I do where we eat in our dining hall, I would also put a chair there where they can see the announcements. Because if you can't see very close, the person's giving announcements, you're out of it, and you miss all the jokes. Like, I'm still trying to think of that one about Wes. Tonight, and I couldn't, by the time I got back to the house and she says, what did they laugh about? I couldn't think of it.
Now, may I say one more thing? If there's a fire, would you please come and get me, because I won't hear the siren.
And the dog doesn't pick up on the siren, okay? Yeah. That's very important. So that's, I guess, what I'm asking. For you to do.
About covers it, isn't it?
I think so. Now, some of you may have some other ideas about this. Or like tonight, when you sing a song at Vespers, when you sing, I mean, it means nothing. You'll notice that, if you noticed, I was following with my finger where we were in the songs, and where she can probably come in on the reading. So she reads at the right time, and then she follows along the songs. But if you're singing, it's a lost cause. If she had the words to the song, then she'd know what you sang. So this is just to sensitize you to this great handicap. Now, yes?
Just wanted to ask, apparently Sydney's handicap is one that a hearing aid does not help.
It helps a little bit, yes. If there isn't a lot of background noise, it does help. In fact, when she and I are sitting across from each other in the kitchen table, probably there's an 80% exchange. Some of it I'll repeat, but I imagine maybe it's 80%. And that isn't all lip reading, because even if one could read lips almost perfectly, there's quite a few words that are the same. Can you give them some of these?
Well, try, mar, bar, par.
Are all the same, you see.
And then there's good and could.
And nothing moves. See, so you
just, and there's lots of them that are
the same, or they don't show at all.
Well, and certain voices are very good where others aren't. For example, on the phone, there's a few people that you can hear quite a few of their words. Like when Karen called up her first Christmas in the camera, you heard quite a few of those words, didn't you?
But the phone in Tacoma, where Becky is, the connection, it's, I don't know, there's something wrong with the phone. I just have a terrible time hearing her.
Yeah, and she hasn't got a good voice for you. Another thing...
I can't hear anybody off that phone. I couldn't hear Karen either.
The other thing is that some people hardly move their lips when they talk. And so that's almost a lost cause. In fact, we're going down to California, and I hope that she can. She hasn't been flying for a long time, but we're going to try to go down and see. We used to live in Davis, California. And the place we're going to live is with a lady who's a very dear friend of hers, but she talks like I'm talking now. Her lips hardly move when she talks. And she's worried whether she's going to be able to understand her. Any other questions? Yes.
I have some hearing loss, and I have a great deal of trouble hearing you.
Well, in a few days, you'll be able to hear me better because I have a very loud voice, but I may be at a pitch where if I was either soprano or more bass, you might be able to hear me.
Yeah. So I have my husband has Parkinson's, and his voice is very weak, and I have an amplifier. And he speaks into the microphone. Can she use that at all?
Yes, we've tried that and it didn't work.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But that's a good point. There are some quite a few devices, and I'm glad you brought this up. There are some devices like
most
you're using.
Than hearing aid.
That's right. It's a box, a plug-in.
It's just a little tiny one.
It is, huh? And it's transistorized so that when your husband, he can talk right into it and it goes, you have an earphone.
But no, it's not an earphone. It's just a little box, and it's connected
it.
To a microphone.
Yeah.
And he talks in the microphone, and then I can hear.
Yeah. We've tried quite a few of these devices, and they haven't worked for her. There is also... Yes?
Well, I visited the Methodist Church the last Sunday. I wasn't at home because I was to try out their amplifying system, and they have the little... thing you hold.
Dingbat.
What do you call it? It's a receiver, I guess. And there's a thing that you put in your ear. And I was dubious because I had very poor luck with
a new system in the Presbyterian Church. Remember that?
Well, they didn't have it the last time I was there. But anyway, I could hear. And I was, I heard everything they said from up front, and it was a revelation because I usually miss so much.
So it depends a lot on the person and the system. There are also now systems, that you can sort of teletype over the phone, so that it could be a readout. You see.
Mm-hmm.
Back there, and then you back there.
A number of the theaters today, they have systems where people who have a hearing loss can go to one of the windows and pick up an affair that's just a bar with a control here and two things that come up to the ear, and you can hear what's on the stage just as though you're right next to the people.
Yeah. Is that like the thing you brought home from Stan Reiner?
I don't think so. Probably a better system. No. No. Because I'd like to have her see Gandhi. We used to go very seldom to the movies, but we'd enjoy them, but she has not been to a movie since.
In the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle, they have those things.
Well, we might try that. In the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle, they have these.
Who?
The Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle has these things, and we may try them. Thank you.
The place that you would go would be where the And
No charge at all. Okay, then it's your turn.
So there's an Ear Institute in Los Angeles.
Now it's standing one.
Maybe you know about them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where President Reagan got his meeting there recently.
Yeah.
Dr. House is a brother thing, and relatives that have been in it for 30-some years. They're up on the latest tracking, I guess, is the manufacturer, Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm familiar with them. And I have recommended them to some people. Yes?
And your wife being missed on television, on the movie screen, or in a play, if she has binoculars that she can see closer.
Yeah. She, when we're fairly close in the theater in Pullman, she could read some of the lips of the people on the stage if they were directly to her. You mentioned that, I think on Washington Week in Review, there were a couple of people there, you could read their lips, couldn't you? But not all of them. She doesn't really watch much TV at all.
Well, it's frustrating because if there's some people I can hear, but and the camera is on their face, and then the camera moves, and I'll hear someplace, or it's in back, you see the back of their head, or you see what they're talking about. It's a discipline. I haven't disciplined myself to watch television. It's hard work. It would be good for me, I know, because I would get a lot of words. I would know what they're talking about, but I wouldn't know what they're saying. But I get tired and I get frustrated too fast, I guess.
Yeah, I think that brings up a good point, which you can correct here if I'm wrong. And that is that if you're reading lips and really concentrating on what people are saying, It's a very exhausting thing to do that. So don't engage her in hour-long conversations.
Well, the lady that got the hearing ear dog, I didn't even believe she was deaf because she carried on the conversation so well.
But she was profoundly deaf. She was profoundly deaf.
Yes, but
she read it real well.
Yes, but it's not very many people that can learn to do it that well.
But you have to work at it, and I had to also have a conference with this lady, you see, to clue me in on what I should and shouldn't do. And then I worked with her. I'd go through some words and mix them up with her at night.
I think the movies that I would probably enjoy the most now are the foreign movies with the
Yes.
To lip read, you have to have partial hearing to get a little sound, or can you lip read if you're totally deaf?
Okay.
What is your estimation of, if you're totally deaf, can you learn to lip read?
Well, oh yes. I should think it would be very hard, but until recently, the school in Washington, anyway, Princeton Dean North, they wouldn't allow the children to sign. It had to be all lip reading, and I think that's what they taught them at the school for the deaf. I don't know if they allowed them to sign there too, but.
They can feel, and I can't understand how in the world they could learn. Okay, Helen, Helen.
I plan to take up signing when I have, now that I've stepped down as dean, and hopefully within a year or so to take up signing. He has already knows some signing, and both Becky and Karn have learned signing for their job, and so they do a little bit, so before this ever happens. So if we lose everything, we can still do some signing. And there are several in the, I do some signing now, only it isn't American Sign Language with her. And we pick up quite a few things. And she picks up quite a few things. Yes, way back there.
How can she speak so normally unless she hears herself?
Well, that's interesting. She asks, how can you speak so normally? Do you hear yourself? It was interesting the other night, because in Chile 1, you can hear pretty much what's going on all over, or in most of your places here, you see. So I said, and I've always told this to the chief, like when we're in church, I can tell her, you know, I can hear you when you whisper, but she can't hear herself when she whispers.
Even now, my voice sounds different, to me. But I, of course, I just lost it so recently, and I've been talking for so many years. It's really difficult for children who lose their hearing before they have learned to speak. It's a real problem. I read a short story, well, it wasn't a story, but it was the day in the life of a deaf man was very revealing. For instance, he went to the store to buy cigarettes, which I don't approve of, but anyway. And he had to buy, he had to buy Salem, because he could say that so that the clerk would understand him. He's gotten into very many embarrassing situations when he had tried to buy Chesterfield or whatever it was he really wanted. And many things we take for granted. For instance, he wanted to go someplace with a friend or do something with a friend. Well, we didn't jump on the phone and make an appointment. So he had to drive across town to the friend's house. The friend wasn't home, so he came home again. Of course, there is equipment that is available for communication, but of course it's expensive.
You see, a person living alone that's hearing handicapped can't get on the phone and visit as other handicapped people can. It isn't an option that's open. And that's why I recommend animals. And maybe you should consider a hearing dog or train it yourself. I'll never forget when I was in London in April, I was, among other programs, I was on the London Broadcasting Company, interviewed by Carol Thatcher. Her mother's a big wheel in England. And she's trying to make her on her own as a journalist and a commentator. And she has a talk show. And after we'd gone through, she'd done her homework, but she doesn't have any more sense of humor than her mother. But we had various callers in. One of them, for example, had taught her budgie to be a guide, a seeing eye budgie, Australian parrot. And she had taught it to, she told me all these remarkable things that she had. And when she had left the front door open,
and she'd forgotten it. She left the front door and she was heading back to the front door. And just before she came to the front door, which was open, she would have ran into it. The budgie flew up from her shoulder onto her face and stopped. It did a lot of remarkable things. But on there was a lady who said she was losing her hearing and was now training her dog to be a hearing dog. That was a
Well,
when I get to be dictator, we're going to change. Now, I have only one other thing. We've used up our allotted time. There's one thing I forgot to mention to you. In most states now, hearing dogs are accepted legally. They have the same privileges as a guide dog. Like when we called up, we said, the boat company doesn't want dogs on the boat. They really can't legally keep you from bringing a seeing eye dog or a guide dog because they're legal in the state of Washington and they are subject to lawsuits if they don't let you do it. And the way you tell, you see that dog has an orange harness on it. Other institutions give them an orange collar and an orange leash, and that's how you tell a hearing dog that's certified.
Yes, and
that's also
when you travel out of the country, you
take the dog. My wife doesn't travel with me, hardly at all. She came to Holden with me and we took our dog and we made arrangements all along the way. We are now debating, if she goes with me to California for a speaking engagement I have in October. We do have reservations on the airlines and they will not charge for it, but we'll have to muscle her. And she will ride with her.
We had to pay $6 on the boat. But we didn't have to muzzle it.
I think that's all that I want to say. I appreciate you coming out.